Welcome to Inside Out, a podcast from Ipsos UU that explores emerging trends, budding innovations, fresh thoughts, and creative ways to get closer to real people in real life. Each episode features thought-provoking conversations showcasing industry-leading thinking from our global network of insight specialists. Hi, I'm Emma Grant, and I'm your host of today's episode of Inside Out. Today we're diving into activation and specifically workshopping to create business impact. Our expert with me today is Veronique Verellen, Ipsos UU's Global Service Lead of Syncidium Qual and Workshops. She is based in Belgium but has traveled the world extensively to facilitate workshops and will share with us lessons learned on how to action and implement research and tips to guide you to become a workshop guru. Welcome, Veronique. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much, Emma. It's great being here. I'm very much looking forward to talking about my passion for workshops today.
As am I. And I think that this is an especially timely topic, actually, to talk about today, because we've just entered a new calendar year of 2020. And I bet a lot of our clients have the goal of achieving better ROI with their research this year. And of course, activation plays a key role in that. So I'm curious to hear your point of view on the increasing need for our clients for activation and what can be done.
I fully agree with you, Emma, because what I've heard lately from a lot of our clients is that they're talking about, as you mentioned, the ROI on research. And, you know, they're often being challenged on that again, because it's even more important in these agile times. There were times that their clients were happy with the what coming from research, but now they're very much focusing on the so what, thinking about the business implications, but especially also on thinking about, and now what do I really need to do? How do I leverage all these data, all the data that they have? There's a data overload nowadays, and distilling those insights is quite hard for them to actually make things happen. What we often see is that when we deliver our research to the client, that's almost the end for us, but that's where our client starts working. You know, they really need to act upon all the data they have collected nowadays. And I think especially workshops are the best tool to get this implemented, because what we see is that we're all struggling for time, getting the right key stakeholders in the right space together to really make decisions is key. And that's why organizing a workshop with the right people in the room with the exact agreement on what the purpose and the objective of this workshop should be is key to make to show this ROI on research.
I think that's a really great way to frame our discussion today and jump into the practical advice that clients and researchers can leverage. So what lessons would you say you've learned over the years on the best way to activate insights? Perhaps you have stories where it's gone amazingly right, or even cases where, I don't know, perhaps it's gone terribly wrong.
Oh, definitely. I can go on for hours. But okay, I'll just pick, you know, I'd like to start with maybe a negative experience. And I'm a very big believer that, you know, like, things go wrong for a reason, and that are the best lesson learned in my workshop experience, even in life. So my best lesson learned is that one day I ran a workshop and I assumed that I knew the purpose, that I knew the exact objective of the workshop, but I didn't, because I didn't speak to the right key stakeholder. I was talking to my direct client and I thought this person knew it all. Beginning, you know, like, we were just kicking off for the first hour and the main key stakeholder stood up and said we're going nowhere. That was a very tough experience, but it was the best lesson learned. So I think these are things that I always take into account.
Oh gosh, that's stressful. Okay, and how about when it goes right? How do you know when you completely nailed it?
That is especially when we really get to those action plans, you know, when we are really having built empathy, so we have been able to bring the consumer stories to life when people were really moved by it. So we often invite our, you know, consumers with their real life stories, so that, you know, often our clients don't have a lot of contact with our with those final consumers. So this is a key moment to bring those consumers in, either via footage or pictures or via immersive experiences that we do even during the workshop. So we might still go to people's homes, and that we really feel the client has, you know, got this idea, they never thought about this. Also that we ask our clients to empathize with their consumers by going through the same kind of experience. You know, like I remember asking our clients who was selling adult diapers to wear adult diapers themselves. It's a quite provocative experience. It's a quite challenging experience, but you know, the best ideas come from there. So that's really where I really really felt that we really nailed it, that, you know, like clients were saying like, I never thought about that. The other day as well, we asked people, you know, our clients to wear extra kilos, which simulated how older people feel when they get older, you know, not necessarily by becoming or, you know, gaining weight, but it's more about, you know, how they feel with their joints, etc. So we simulated this experience about how you feel when you're getting older. And our clients, remember our clients saying, next time I'm going to be much more empathic with my mother. I understand now, you know, the pain she's going through. So that is for me, like, you know, those kind of eye-opening experiences for our clients, but also for us. And then another way when I really feel that we are nailing it, when we're really getting to it, when we really have a very, you know, like in a A3 size poster, we have an exact roadmap. What are we going to do? When, who's responsible for what? When we have an exact, you know, action planning with clear business objectives and the insights and the opportunities and, you know, like, how can we grow the business? You know, what are the impacts? Which kind of resources do we need to do?
Now, you mentioned the word empathy a few times with regards to workshops. And I know this is something we talked about often on the podcast in many different aspects of what we do. What do you see as the importance of empathy with activation?
I think it's a very good observation that you've made, because what we are really trying to bring into workshops is a very human-centric experience to build empathy that will really drive relevant actions to generate really business actions. And when we're talking about empathy, that means empathy with the consumer, but also having empathy with our clients. And I often compare running a workshop is like being both the chef and the host of an important meal. And that, like any good chef, you wouldn't turn up to a kitchen and hope to find the right ingredients. Good meals, like any workshops, involve careful planning and preparation, but also skill in the cooking of the meal of the day, and also timely deliver all of the courses to keep your demanding guests happy and satisfied. So when we organize workshop, we have to really think about an amazingly good preparation. I'm a big believer that workshop is 80% preparation and 20% running it. And nowadays, I think that being a good facilitator also makes sure requires you being a very good host, because you really need to empathize with your client, with their cultures of the company, with their hidden agendas, with their you know, competition with time, with a certain kind of tensions or conflicts that you have within the organization. And as a facilitator, you have to empathize with this, because you can use this conflict in a very constructive way to really get to better ideas. It's like if you're hosting a fancy dinner meal as well, of course you're taking into account everyone's requirements, everyone's maybe allergies. That's in a way you have to think about this as well with your clients. So that means that beforehand, you need to talk to key stakeholders to really nail down the purpose of the workshop. In a dinner, when you host a dinner as well, you think about, you know, the seating around the table in advance to make your dinner a success. That's also what you need to think about when you're going to host a workshop, thinking about composing the right team, thinking about, as I call it, the dream team, thinking about a great diversity of genders, of background, ethnicity, the roles everyone will play within this workshop. So it's more than thinking about their job roles, but it's also the role they will play in the workshop. So it's really about understanding people. And I think we, as a research company, we're really good at understanding people, both the consumers, understanding what really matters to them, what are their tensions, what are their aspirations. But we also have to use these skill sets, those soft skill sets, to really empathize with our clients and understand what their aspirations, their needs, and their tensions are.
I really love that analogy about being a chef and a host of a meal. That really helps to bring it to life. And I want to dive in now on something you said about culture, because I'm especially curious, because as our resident workshop guru here, I know you've traveled all over the world to facilitate workshops. How do you manage different markets and different cultures in these scenarios?
I just love that question, Emma, because, you know, I've been in research for a very long time already, but very soon in my career, I picked up this challenge to guide my clients into the activation, activating their results. And as a researcher, I was really able to travel to different parts of the world, different cultures, different cultural nuance. So that really made me already very empathic to cultural nuances. But with the years, to a certain extent, I've seen that there are certain kind of myths around certain cultures that I've been able to debust or bust. I don't know exactly how you say that. Yes, it is correct that certain cultures are less outspoken than others, meaning that it's not only about a hierarchical role, like, you know, senior versus junior, but in certain cultures, you know, people are a bit more afraid to speak out even in front of their peers. That means equality of numbers of years of experience, but it's more about, you know, certain cultures are not really open to voice their opinion in plenary sessions. Ways to avoid that is, of course, by having smaller group sessions or giving them a chance to write things down on a post-it or do some voting or, you know, feedback via digital components. So that really ways to overcome those. Now, there are certain cultures that are indeed a bit more sensitive to hierarchy, and that, you know, you need to take that into account. And of course, I often speak to my peers and the colleagues in those countries, and I ask about those sensitivities up front. And a way to avoid those things, especially when it comes to senior versus junior, is that you give the senior person, often, you know, either the brand manager or the CEO, you give them the chance to already either kick off the meeting or, you know, give them their opinion up front, you know, plenary, so that people have listened to them, so that we can avoid these kind of tensions about, I feel anxious to speak out and maybe embarrass myself.
Well, and as you've said, you've been in the activation space for a large part of your career. So I want to hear more about you. Tell me about your background and why you decided to focus on this area.
I've studied political sciences a long time ago, but that also, and especially international politics. But one of the reasons and why I'm emphasizing international politics, because I was very much interested in looking at cultures. I was very much looking at, you know, the bigger picture and the bigger scheme of everything. And as a person, I'm a very energetic person. You know, I'm a very hands-on person, and I really love it when things get done, when I can make decisions and move forward. And that's also one of the reasons why I was so much, triggered by running workshops because it's actually a very physical exercise as well. You know, like not only in the preparation and, you know, setting up the curated venue and making sure, you know, everything looks inspirational, but it's also about helping our clients to guide them into activating the results. It's about listening to the different kind of teams, different roles within in the organizations, what they're going to do with that. And what I love about facilitating workshops is that I'm able to help the client to look at a bigger picture. I'm able to toy with certain ideas and possibilities, and I love to stretch their imagination by provoking with competitive thinking or with lots of different, you know, like divergence techniques that initially they think like, what are we going to do now? But finally they see that, you know, we have to look differently. We have to look through different spectacles, different eyes to really, you know, look at things differently to finally help them land and, you know, help them put together a very workable solution and giving them structure to ideas so that they become a reality.
I think one of the things from my perspective that I've seen with you, and I recall being in a workshop with you where you came in and you, of course, had done all the prep work and we had all of our materials to work with, but you came in, I think, dressed like Elvis, and it was kind of an up your Elvis kind of workshop. And I think your point about the energy that you have to bring in really makes such a huge difference because, I mean, you're running the show, and I just thought that was such a great way to bring it to life, get people out of their shells, and really provoke people to get at the ideas that you needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It is very much about, you know, keeping the energy flowing and keeping the people moving so that they really feel like, you know, we're going somewhere and this is the process and that you really guide them to this final action planning. However, it's not about me running the show. It's about me helping them to get to those actions. It's all about, you know, it's finally about them. It's about them helping to make decisions. And that is indeed, you know, I remember this and, you know, you also have to think about the certain times that you can, you know, dress up, so to speak, to run a workshop. And that was a bit very creative workshop. And not always do I wear an Elvis costume. Not at all.
Really?
But I think about my dress code. I really think about my dress code. And, you know, like wearing costume is a very rare occasion. But it's indeed about, you know, making sure that you bring in the right energy. And it's about you as a facilitator, definitely, but there are so many tools that you can do it. Because I hear from people as well that there is this myth that, you know, as a workshop facilitator, you have to be, a very energetic person. Not necessarily. Indeed, you have to be very positive. You have to lead the way. You have to be your best self during a workshop. But there's many tools to keep the energy. And I'm not talking necessarily about, typical energizers. But the way you can keep the energy flowing is by having healthy food and sometimes a bit unhealthy snacks, but it's also by, you know, having lots of different techniques to keep the energy going. It's about different compositions of the group, so not work with the same kind of people in during the whole day, bringing it's different kind of personalities among the participants, bring good energy as well. It's about offering multisensorial experiences so that, you know, different kind of intelligence are provoked. It's about, bringing in new thinking, bringing in new different voices, for instance, having experts talking about a certain topic, having clients speak for a certain time and inspire the team. So there are a lot of different ways to keep the energy because that's important. You need to keep it going because remember, it's about a workshop, and I know some people don't like the word workshop anymore. Some call it atelier or call it a think tank. It doesn't really matter, but it's indeed we are working together. That's what it is, eh? Working together to, you know, to achieve something, to solve a problem, to create ideas, to find an agreement. But indeed, it's about moving. That's definitely a good observation.
And speaking of moving, how have workshops shifted over the years, and mm-hmm. and what's sort of necessary now that might not have been necessary 5-10 years ago?
It's a, you know, very good question, Emma, because what I've seen is that when I started running workshops a long time ago, it was easy to get a day, 2 days, 3 days to run a workshop. And then there were times that people said, we don't have any time. So you need to do it almost like as a, you know, like an hour or 2 hours or half a day maximum. And that was, of course, very challenging, but it worked. It worked. Of course, then you cannot do as much as you can have a whole day or 2 half days. And what I see nowadays is that clients want see the value of workshops again, because indeed a lot of decisions are being made within 1 day, 2 days that normally drag on for months and months, especially when you think about a scrum approach or the sprint approaches. What we often see is that, you know, clients get, you know, get lots of brilliant ideas and really action plans within 3, 4, 5 days. So I see there is a tendency to have workshops for, you know, like longer periods again. So definitely this is a very good evolution, I think.
Well, Veronique, I think this is really good food for thought for everyone to start the year. So thank you so much for your insights and your experience and teaching us a little bit about workshops today. Thank you for your time.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you very much, Emma.
Thank you all for tuning in to Insight Out. Be sure to hit subscribe on your favorite podcasting app to make sure you get all of our latest episodes delivered right to you. We'll see you next time.